I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and our guest today is Jenna Ushkowitz, and we're discussing Chloe Benjamin's novel, The Immortalists, this week on The Stacks Book Club. Please be warned, there will be spoilers today. Before we talk to Jenna, I just wanted to remind you to use the link in the show notes to find all the books discussed today, as well as the social media accounts for Jenna and all things The Stacks. Shopping through the show notes helps to support The Stacks. People always ask me, how can I support The Stacks? Well, here are a few ways. One, shop through the show notes. It's super easy and it comes at no additional cost to you. 2, join us over on Patreon. Patreon is a place where you earn perks and you get to be a part of our virtual book club, and you get to know that your money is going to help keep the lights on around here. So if that sounds like something that you'd be into, go to patreon.com/thestacks. And this one's super easy. 3, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, if it's Google or Apple or Spotify or whatever. And if you're feeling extra lovey-dovey, go ahead and give us a rating and a review and tell your friends about us. Okay, now that all the business is out of the way, it's time for my conversation with Jenna Ushkowitz. All right, you guys, I am back today with Jenna Ushkowitz. I want to add the N.
You have to keep this in.
Okay.
Ushkowitz.
I want to add an N to Jenna's name. Jenna Ushkowitz, but I want to call you Ushkowitz. I don't know why.
Ushkowitz. That actually probably rolls off the tongue better. That's why.
Yeah. Ushkowitz.
You are in good shape if you're just adding an N to the
just
my last name.
Because
other people, it's jarring. jarring.
What do you get? Give me one of your best.
Auschwitz.
Oh.
Jenna Auschwitz. Which I was like, that's not right. There's a K in there, and there's also an Ush.
That's a lot.
There's also like Oshkoshkowitz I've gotten before, which like that's not right either. It's not that hard.
Here's what I think about people who mispronounce names, because my name is Tracy Thomas. It's very easy. Tracy spelled with an I, and I get tracky sometimes. So I actually think that people get stupider when it comes to names. Like, it's not hard. It's not even like Tracy with an I is super far off.
That's really funny.
So like, if you have any like extra letters that people are uncomfortable with, let alone like,
good luck.
Yeah. Like Thomas, Trocky. Normal people get Trocky.
Trocky.
Thank you. Also, Siri cannot say my name. Because like, you're like, Siri.
Oh, what like, does she say?
She just like says it weird. And she's like, yes, Tracy. Like, it's Tracy, Siri. Come on.
I don't have Siri on, so I don't know how she would say my name.
Anyways.
Okay, so we're talking today about The Immortalists by Chloe Benjamin. It's a novel. We're going to spoil it. So if you haven't read it yet, just know we're not protecting you in any way, shape, or form. Go read it. It's a good book. So go check it out. But basically, the premise of the book is four siblings, the Gold siblings, they go when they're young. They're like 13, 11, 9, and 7. And they go to a woman who's a fortune teller who tells them, who allegedly can tell them the date of their death. And she does. And then we follow each one of the four siblings as they approach that date.
That's good.
Is that good?
That was actually really, I would never have been able to do that.
I read a lot of synopsises and things about the book. I think a lot of them say, like, what would you do if you knew the day you were going to die?
Yeah, that's the main, the crux.
That's really it. Ugh. So we always start in the same place. What did you think of the book?
I loved it. I read it on my Italy trip. And I could not put it down. And there were times where, like, my boyfriend wanted to, like, chat on the plane. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm reading.
Who wants to chat on a plane?
No, I know. I was like, excuse me, I'm reading. I'm busy. I'm being an academic. I loved it. I loved the questions that it, what's the word I'm looking for? It
brought up?
Yeah. I mean, there was a better word for it that I was looking for. But yes, the questions that it brought up. And I really like these characters. I liked the family. And it's actually a really good book for someone like me who can put a book down really easily. Mm-hmm. I could not put this down because it's like a slight thriller. Like each chapter is so well structured and written that you're like, I have to get to the end of this because I have to know if they die on the date that the fortune teller told them and how it happens.
Totally.
And if it happens.
Right. I had a lot of those feelings. I kind of had mixed feelings about the book. Okay. I really liked it. I did not. I went into the book being like, okay, this is the book Jenna picked. Like, we'll see how it goes. And I actually was surprised with how long I was really into the book. Like, I think that I was really into the book all the way up until, like, Daniel.
Fair.
I still liked the book afterwards. Like, I generally would say that I enjoyed this book.
Fair.
But I was, like, very into it. And I kept waiting to be not into it.
Oh, see, that's good. I'm so glad I picked a book that you were mostly into.
I did fizzle a little bit at the end. But, like, mostly I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, I think what it was is I just really wanted to know how they were going to die.
Well, I mean, that was a big part of it too.
And then when I realized how did you say Varya?
Varya.
When I realized she probably wasn't going to die, that's when I think I really started to fizzle.
I actually agree. I felt the same way for Varya was the one that lost me the most.
Yeah. It was a lot of like technical stuff.
Yeah. And like, she's the least interesting. So I get why she put her at the end, but also like, do you want to end with that one? I don't know. Yeah. It was a lot of technical. And like that made me go, she ain't dying.
Right.
She's dying on the date that she, and also having read all the other, like Daniel and Clara and Simon's, like it all came to fruition, whether it was based on their choices or, you know, fate, it all happened on the date. So I didn't think she was going to veer that far away from
the story.
Yeah, exactly. But I just loved the question that it begged about, whether it was manifested by themselves or if it was magic.
Right. Well, what did you think? What did you decide on?
Well, I felt like for each person, it was different.
Right.
Like for Clara, it was something that she chose, because she took her own life. I think for Simon was the most, the one I questioned the most, because he lived because he knew he was going, like he lived the most because he knew he was going to die the youngest. But like, did that mean that he actually brought that on himself or?
See, I didn't think it did, because I felt like if you follow that logic that he brought it on himself, then you're then saying that like being gay is a death sentence. Do you know what I mean? That's how I would have interpreted.
Oh, interesting. I don't think I would have interpreted like that.
Okay.
I think I would have interpreted like being reckless in any way, because that could have happened to a, I mean, not in that
right,
time.
Right, but at that time period.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, I kind of what I mean is like at that time period, it could have happened to anybody, mm-hmm. but they didn't know. He didn't know he was being reckless. Like, cause they didn't know that sex, unprotected sex caused HIV.
It was
HIV
just
and
a plague
AIDS.
Of sorts, right?
So he didn't think like, oh, I'm being reckless. Mm. He just thought I'm being 20. Like, think about how many 20-year-olds are having sex with all sorts of people now.
I guess you're right. Yeah. I thought about it. Yeah. If you reframe it like that, I guess they all kind of did it, but they didn't. I don't know.
Yeah. Confusing. I like to buy in. So I bought in with the fortune teller.
Wow.
I think she knew.
Oh, I totally bought. I was like leaning way away from that.
Really?
Way, way away from
that. I was all in on the fortune teller.
I think also because like if I were a fortune teller, if I were to go to the fortune teller, I'd be like, this is a crock of crap.
Yeah. Me too. I wouldn't buy in my real life.
But that's how I went in thinking, and I was like, I don't know that I would have bought into that, but they definitely, that's so interesting. I
don't think there's a right answer, which is part of what makes the book so good.
Captivating.
Yeah. When I announced we were doing this book, so many people were like, oh my God, I love that book. Mm-hmm. I love that book. And now I'm like, I want to have every single one of those people tell me what they thought.
Yeah.
Did they think it was the fortune teller? Or
I'm
did
dying
they think,
to know.
I'm just so curious because I think you could read, like, I believe that the fortune teller was right. Cause I also think that makes a more interesting book.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess so. So this is what I wrote down in the weird 24-hour travel that I had. Okay. They live on in each other.
Yeah.
It was interesting because Varya had the longest prediction of the latest age, right? And mm-hmm. she lives the most controlled life because of it.
Right.
Simon lives because of it. Clara lives for it. And Daniel lives with it.
Right. Interesting.
And then I wrote manipulate versus fate.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Those are all...
General, but...
Literally, I have notes here, and pretty much all of that is in my notes in one form or another. Well, because the thing that was an interesting choice, and I would be very curious to know what Chloe Benjamin would say about it, is that she chose to make it that the person who died first lived the most full life, and the person who was going to die later lived the most restricted life. And in my mind, it would be the opposite. Like obviously if I knew I was going to die in six, well, maybe not the opposite, but I feel like why would Varya be so rigid if she knew she's going to you could do anything. You could jump out of a plane. You're not dying today.
Totally.
Like, I can go do this thing.
But that's like the perspective of the human that's their instinct to go, well, I have to protect it in a way.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess you have to buy in to live that life.
Yeah.
Cause if you don't believe it, then you still have to live like a scaredy cat.
Like Varya.
Yeah, I am Varya. I'm a scaredy cat kind of person.
Okay.
And so I feel like if I knew like I'm going to make it to 88, I would be less scared.
I would be more scared, I think.
You think?
Yeah. I would be more scared because every day I would know. I don't know. I think it would loom on me more than not. Like I think I'm more of a Clara.
Okay.
Or a Simon.
But
Daniel really was the one who lived in fear of it, right?
Yeah.
He was the one who really...
And he also was the one who felt responsible for all of it.
All of it.
Because he's the one who
brought them there
to the woman. Yeah. Daniel was also my least favorite.
Well, I felt like he was the most angry, and that's what I felt the least attached to him.
Yeah, I didn't like him. I was very obviously into Simon.
Loved Simon.
I mean, could Simon live longer? So we couldn't. I mean, if he did, we probably would have hated Simon. But
right, totally.
Loved Simon.
I loved Simon. And I like Clara too. I like what she did for Simon. I like their relationship. I feel like Varya and Daniel didn't have that, so it lost me a little bit.
Yeah.
But I liked the Raj Daniel.
The fight.
Yeah.
Like their tension. Raj being Clara's husband.
Who
I also didn't like.
Yeah, I didn't really like him either, but I like.
But I don't
think
you were supposed to like him.
No, I don't think so.
Because he was not.
The one who, like, basically in the eyes of the family took her away and took away the dream of it.
Exploited her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I liked Clara's story a lot. I don't know more than Simon. I think I liked Clara's story better and I liked Simon more.
Yeah.
Because I just loved... the real, I mean, immortalist was in your face in that at that point, right?
Well, and she's the title character.
Right.
Kind of. She adds the S, the immortalists, right. Meaning all four of them, I guess. But
yeah,
she is your title. It comes from her.
Right.
She's like the dreamer and the free spirit. And she's the one who kind of, she's the one who goes in the room first. She's the one who kind of takes life by the horns.
That's true.
And her suicide was really interesting because it wasn't, I don't know how to say this. It wasn't a suicide that came from mental illness in the way that we're used to seeing it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it wasn't framed that way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until later when I think Varya or Daniel said
she was troubled.
She probably was troubled.
Right.
And I didn't notice it.
Right.
But as you're reading it, you're not feeling like she's troubled.
Not at all.
Which I've never
A drunk, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I've never experienced reading about someone who eventually goes on to take their life as anything other than I'm battling all these demons. This is so hard for me. And like the demons were there, like she was hearing the knocking.
Totally.
Like there were signs of it, but it never felt like.
Yeah, I agree.
And I didn't feel like she glorified it either. Like
not
it didn't feel like she was like, suicide is great, but it felt, it just, it was really smart.
It was, well, it was warranted within the story of like, I thought about it more as like, did she do that to avoid the day? Did she do that to take it by the horns and actually take control of it instead of it taking control of her.
Right.
And I think that like, I think they present it when Daniel and Varya, I mean, I could be wrong, but like, I feel like maybe Chloe presented it that way just to present that question. Like everything else that she did in the book was presenting questions for us to like ponder.
Right. This is definitely like one of those book club books. Like I'm like, I get it why book clubs do it. Cause there's just so many little nuanced like moments.
Would you want to know, your date?
Yes.
You would.
But the thing is, I would want to know like everyone around me's date too.
I don't want to know my date.
I'm less scared of me dying. I'm more scared of
other people around you.
Everyone else, well, everyone around me dying, but also what everyone else around me will do once I'm dead.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't, like, I have a fear of dying in a plane crash because I particularly think that would be a horrible thing to find out about a loved one.
Oh,
I know what I mean?
I see. So the effect that it would have on other people.
Like, I would want to know how I was going to die. Maybe more than when?
Like because of the shock value.
Yeah. And because like if I was going to die in a car accident, I might be like more apt to be like, I love you and give you a hug.
When you leave. Yeah.
I don't know.
I always think about
that. I, when I die, I'm dead. I'm gone.
Right.
But I do wonder about the people around me and like how they'll take it and what that will mean.
Interesting. That's so interesting.
I think I would want to know though when.
I do not want to know.
No.
I do not want to know.
Do you think it would make you live life differently?
Definitely. And I don't know which way. I just know it will make me live differently. I know that I would probably seesaw back and forth on like, well, you should live all the this, but then you have to be more like, I would also be in fear and maybe live like Varya a little bit and like very controlled. I tend to like books that question mortality, like a lot of people, I'm sure, just because it's just that question of like,
it's a good question.
What the hell? And it's funny. We were reading this and I was finishing up, Varya's section as David, my boyfriend, was reading When Breath Becomes Air for the first time. And he was finishing up his, that book. And so we were like in the hotel at one point, I like looked at him, I put the book down cause I was having one of the, which I have a lot, the outer body experience. We were like, we're all going to die one day.
Yes.
And I was like, this death is just so weird. And he looked at me and he was like, I'm in the same headspace you are. Right
death
now.
Is so weird.
So weird.
It's like one of those things where you're just like,
it's inevitable. We don't talk about it cause we don't want to, cause it's just one of those weird things.
I think we do it wrong in America.
How so?
I think we should talk about it more because I think that it's obviously an important part of life. We talk about birth a lot. We have a lot of things that are like revolve around life coming into the world.
Yeah.
And I feel like in other cultures and other countries and other places, there is like mourning is acceptable and appreciated and it's not weird and death is a part of life.
Yeah.
And I think that we're fucked up when it comes to death because we don't deal with it.
I think you're right. I think it's interesting though, because when you say that, because I agree, we talk about birth because it's celebrating things that are coming into life. It's exciting, right? Yeah. Whereas death is something that we fear because it's unknown. And we don't talk about it enough because we fear it. And so nobody wants to talk about it. But like in other countries, like mental health, nobody talks about it. Like we don't talk about it in the US enough either, but like nobody talks about it. So it's so interesting because societal cultural things that we just don't talk, that people don't talk about because it's uncomfortable and then it makes it feel like it's wrong.
Right.
And like we're making death seem wrong, but like it's inevitable.
It's going to happen. It's right or wrong. It's happening.
It's happening.
So there's a line in the book and I think Luke says it to her that's like, everybody dies, but it doesn't make it easier, easier. Uh-huh. And I feel like that is, I think that we don't like, when someone dies in your life, it's like you're allowed to be sad for like 3 weeks maybe.
Right.
And then when someone asks you, oh, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You say, I'm fine.
Totally.
Because they don't actually want you to break down and start crying. They don't actually care because we don't talk about death because it's uncomfortable and you're worried. You're in mourning and you're like, I'm worried about making this person feel
uncomfortable.
Right? Like it's like, and then you see videos in other countries where there's people who it's like at the funeral, they're wailing and they're weeping. And here it's like, we wear a veil over our face. We don't want people to see us cry. Like, so I just feel like.
It's true.
I feel like we could handle it better. I feel like we could.
Destigmatize the
Bingo.
Yeah the That's the right. thing around it
right because it's
uncomfortable.
Happening all the time.
Well, I think it's also like we don't talk about, like you said, people don't really want to know how you are, right? And so it's like people don't talk, they don't, you don't want to make them feel uncomfortable and they don't want to feel uncomfortable because they don't know how to act around you when you actually reveal what, like being vulnerable itself is just a thing that people aren't used to in this country.
Right.
Nobody, that's not the norm.
Well, we're also, I mean, this is kind of a reach, but I'm going to go there.
All right. All right.
This country was founded on this idea of strength and like taking and like, mm-hmm. and like having ownership over things and all of that kind of stuff. And so I think that the vulnerability of giving or being soft or whatever is something that we don't value at all in America because that's not our origin story.
Right.
And because the country is so young, we haven't had time to rewrite like who we are. We haven't had time to change. Like I feel like just now America is getting to this place where we're not necessarily the superpower that we thought that we were. Like there are things where we're vulnerable that we're seeing. And so, but I do think that some of that ties into how we treat mental health. I mean, we were talking about it last week also with education.
Right.
Like when you said Brené Brown would be a book you would suggest in schools, like we don't teach that in schools.
It's true.
And there's no reason that we don't teach it except for that we don't value that as a society.
We teach about history and battles and conquering and strength and also like, you know, females would have to put on strong faces because we weren't even, you know, women weren't valued like that to begin with. And that was all, you know, men and strength. And I just don't think we as a country have gotten there. And I hope we do. But I don't know that we will.
Yeah.
Like that will ever be like a priority or of a value of like vulnerability. We're starting to talk about it.
Yeah, we are. I agree.
I don't know.
I think that there will be shifts as there have been shifts as other people start to gain power aside from like cis het white dudes.
Right.
And like that's again like things we value. That's what we teach in school. Those are the books we teach for the most part. But I feel like as those things change and as we start to value things outside of like success,
right?
This idea of success, which is something that only like white men are able to achieve or are supposed to achieve,
right?
Like it's like you're a Korean woman and you produced a show that won a Tony, and I'm sure people are like, oh, Jenna, like she's a unicorn, right?
Yeah.
But like if you were a white dude, they'd be like, he produced a show
congrats.
That
was, like, exactly.
As you're supposed to.
Exactly.
So I think like as we move away and like start to see other people
represented.
And they start to be able to talk about their struggles and their challenges and their successes, I think that maybe we will
Yeah.
It's hopeful, maybe.
No, I mean, that's good. That is hopeful. I think, we are celebrating being different. We are celebrating people, but it's still like people come out and you're like, it's so brave that you're doing that when it's not the norm.
Right.
Because not everybody's talking about it.
Right.
And with social media too, like we're creating this fake world.
Right.
In some sense, like, thing where people don't show their weaknesses, or, and I'm hoping that that's shifting as well. Like Instagram is starting to, people are just starting to take the filters off, pun intended, because it's boring, you know, it's so boring.
But, like, how many people from The Bachelorette can you really follow? You know, they all are selling the same tea.
I know. And Sugar Bear hair care, whatever. Yeah.
But you know what? They all do have gorgeous hair.
They do have gorgeous hair. Is it theirs?
It's purchased, at least. They own it.
They bought it.
They own it.
They bought it.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, back to the book. I got really off on a tangent.
I think
it's important because I do think that, like, books about death, I think the reason we do become obsessed with them and they are so popular is because we're not talking about death in any other way. So it's like you are allowed to think about these things.
Right. And it makes you think about these things. Yeah. Did you like – I really liked the magic in Clara's story.
Yeah.
I loved the incorporation of, like, magic on top of the fortune teller. It was, like, just another level of, like – what magic is and how it's perceived. And I love magic. I totally believe in magic.
Hate magic.
Oh my God.
I like the idea of like magic, but I don't like a magic show. I don't like
live for
it. I don't like being called out in an audience. I don't want to pick a card. Cause like you are, look, you're not asking me to pick a card because you're going to get it wrong. So why are we here?
Oh my God.
I just want to be like, it's a four of hearts. Can we go to the next person?
I love it. I love it.
But okay, the magic in this book, it wasn't just magic versus like human will. There was also religion.
Right.
It was kind of like religion versus magic versus human will, like these three things kind of interacting.
Yeah.
And are you religious?
Not really. No. I mean, I was brought up Catholic, but I was, I'm not a practicing Catholic.
And you have a Jewish last name.
Exactly.
So you're all sorts of things.
So I'm technically whatever you want.
Well, I went to Catholic school, but I was, my mom's Jewish, so I'm Jewish.
Right.
But Catholicism's filled with magic. It is. There's
what
so,
do you mean?
Like, I don't know if like you're drinking the body and blood of Christ. Like, there's like all the miracles. Like, I feel like Catholicism is like, you know, like to be a saint, you have to have performed a certain number of miracles. You have to have these, like.
I guess that's right. I mean, I don't know. I guess I see miracles and magic as different things.
Sure. Well, I think all, but I, you all make a good of point. It is, I think it has a sense of magic to it that other religions don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a ton about religion, but I just feel like having gone to Catholic school, I remember being like, oh, these are kind of like magical stories.
Sure. No, sure. That actually, yeah, now that you say that, I'm not, I think about it.
But I understand.
I feel like, you know, Taoism, Buddhism is more of like the conjuring of your inner self and more, and less about the history of the story of, you know, it's usually like one man that created.
And it's about your relationship to yourself versus your relationship
with
to like the
God or the higher being.
I guess a lot of Christianity would be considered magic too. Like Jesus's story is pretty magical.
I mean, yeah.
I guess if it's not your religious belief, you can see it as magic. If it is your religious belief, then that's faith.
Right.
But that's kind of the difference between religion and magic, right?
Right.
If you believe it,
it's
faith. And if you don't, it's like magical. Right? Like
it really is.
It's supernatural. I can't explain it. But if you believe
magic.
In it, then it's your faith.
This is very alchemist as well. This book reminded me of the Alchemist.
I haven't read The Alchemist in a long time.
He goes and he has the prophecy and he goes and he basically goes to find the treasure, and it's all about destiny and how he like manifests it along the way and the choices he made. So this is like, I just, when I was going back to The Alchemist, I picked it up, you know, today, and I was like, that's so interesting. I wonder if that had any influence on her.
On her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
No.
Let's go back to religion.
Okay.
Talk to me about the religion, because it didn't play such a large role in when I was reading it. So
it didn't play a large
role
in my reading it because I didn't really understand a lot of it.
Right.
Because I'm born Jewish, celebrate Jewish holidays.
But not,
you know,
right.
But
practicing.
Not practicing, wasn't bat mitzvah, can't speak a lick of Hebrew. None of those things. My dad was not into religion.
Got it.
And so he was like, we're not doing that. So we did Passover and Easter. We did like, you know,
Hanukkah.
Yeah. Hanukkah and Christmas. We do all the holidays. My God, if there's a meal, we do it.
That's fair.
So I was interested in it because it just came up a lot. So it obviously was important. It was important to the father, Saul.
Right.
And it became important to the mother, Gertie, because of Saul.
Right.
And because she wanted desperately something to believe in.
Right. And the influence, and by proxy, that influences the children, right?
But whether they take it or not. None of them really
were. That's the thing. I guess that's why I kind of like phased over it, just because it wasn't in the main four stories.
Right. But it came up so much. Like,
it did
like
come up. Well, the father came
up
a lot, right? Let me see
They had it come up in the, like Clara would go see all of them every year at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Like there was definitely, I think that if I knew more about Judaism and like the Talmud and all of those things that they were referencing, I might appreciate better what she was trying to do.
Yeah.
But it did feel like it was in relationship to the idea of will versus like fate.
Right. Wait, I literally opened this and this is the line. Lately, he has struggled to sustain a connection with God. 1 year ago, he decided to explore Jewish theology. He thought of it as a tribute to Saul. Interesting. That must have been Daniel's section.
Yeah, Daniel.
Was Daniel super religious?
I feel like he was not super religious, but he seemed to be the one that felt the most, connected. That felt the most obligated to the family.
Because he was the one who was supposed to take over the business.
Simon was supposed to take over the business. Daniel went to be a doctor, but Daniel was the one who took Gertie in. Into the home. He was the one that took them to the thing. He was the oldest son, so he definitely felt the most like family oriented. And so it makes sense that he would be the one that wanted to look into Jewish theology because of the father.
Yeah, I guess it's mainly about like the religion thing. I think must be about the different perspectives of belief,
Yeah.
For each character. And how it affected them. I just don't think that any of the main four like were truly affected by the religion, except for their, well, I guess, you know, influenced by their mother and father.
Right. Yeah. And I think like each one was, I don't know if you think of it like a Venn diagram or something, like they were all kind of indifferent between magic, religion and human will.
Right.
They were all kind of on different parts of their own spectrum.
Totally.
Obviously, like Clara was very far on the magic side.
Right.
And I feel like Simon was very far
on the fate side.
Yeah, on the fate side.
Right. And then Daniel was like a little bit in between religion.
Yeah.
And did Daniel believe in magic?
No, I don't think he did.
No.
I don't think he did at all.
And Varya was very much
on
science.
The human will, science
side. Human will, science-y side. Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating.
No, it's one of those, like, sometimes when we do this show, when we talk about books, the more I talk about the book, the more confused I get about what I thought about it.
This is one of those. Yep.
Yeah, because there's just so much stuff going on. I also, in my notes, I wrote down, it's kind of the Forrest Gump of books, because it's like we go through this long period of time with this family, and it's like, oh, let's hit the AIDS epidemic. Like, oh, 9/11.
Right.
Like, oh, now we're in Iraq. Like, it's like all these moments, like, and just like Forrest Gump, some of it really worked for me.
Totally.
And some of it felt super heavy-handed.
Yeah.
You know, like it was like certain parts I was like, this is so great. Like I loved being in San Francisco in the 1980s. Like
totally.
I thought that was so good.
I loved it.
It was so good. And you could tell she put so much research into the book.
Right.
Like I bet if you went and Googled San Francisco, Castro Street, those names of those bars were the ones.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Like those were the ones. Those were the places.
No, totally. I liked the fact that we did get to revisit a little bit of the fortune teller as well.
I did too.
I didn't think we would.
I didn't think we would either. I'm glad they found her.
I'm glad they found
her. And her scammer family that she wasn't part of.
Are we sure she wasn't part of them?
I don't think so. She was like living in Ohio.
In her trailer park, right?
Yeah.
Right.
What did you think of the Daniel thing? The way Daniel went out?
It wasn't my favorite.
No.
It felt a little cop-out-y. I was actually a little shocked by it as well.
Yeah.
I think I was getting to it in like anticipation. Nothing I don't think would have been very satisfying to me. I just feel like he was going to go somehow, and it wasn't going to be pretty.
Right.
It was, let me think about this. So he shot the,
I don't think he
shot.
No.
He was going to shoot her. And then what's his name?
Eddie
shot him in the leg in an artery, right? That was, to avoid her and, you know, in his line of duty. I don't know. It wasn't my favorite.
I didn't love that because you're right. It wasn't exactly clear.
Yeah.
I was a little bit confused at what had happened, but I guess to backtrack slightly, Eddie, what did you think of Eddie? The police officer?
Yeah, I liked him until it all got to, I liked him. I liked him with Clara.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him. And then it got like a little forced to me when it came into like investigating her case. I was like, that's really convenient.
Yeah.
And what was his relationship? I mean, they went into it, right? They got into it. And then he was like, don't look into it. We're almost there. And then they weren't.
Right.
I don't know. What did you think of Eddie?
So I didn't love Eddie necessarily because I felt like he was a device and I was trying to figure out who he was or what he's supposed to be. And I came to the idea that he was like the angel of death, that like once Eddie came in,
that was
you were going to die. because he never came in with Varya.
Oh my god!
But I made that up. I literally was like,
no, that's so interesting though. He really
like
he transcended
up,
every
right and right
chapter.
Before each Thank person, god. Not right before, but like it was like then
shortly
and then
before,
it was like
right.
the switch.
Whoa. That's so interesting. I actually never, I'm sure that that's got to be something.
Because to me, the only reason you have the same person be in all, like that was the kind of Forrest-y Gump part to me, where it's like the same person is like popping up in all these moments. Like,
right.
That's like a little contrived. But the only reason you would do that in my mind is because you're making a point about who he's supposed to be.
Right.
I called it like the angel of death in my notes, but like, you know, whatever it is that he like blows in and then it's like
right,
the end
it.
Is near.
Hmm.
I don't.
But what effect? I'm just wondering, like, what play devil's advocate? Like, what's the message? Like, where, you know, because then we get in a little like, I don't know, that gets a little sci-fi to me.
Right. Well, I don't know if he's necessarily literally supposed to be that.
No, but like,
more like
has that.
Like,
is this weird influence?
Because why else do you need like the sibling? What I don't understand why it's there otherwise if it's not supposed
totally.
To be some tie-in, because the siblings already are connected to each other. They're siblings.
We don't need him.
And we know that they're on these paths towards their death.
Right.
So like we don't really need him. It could have been three separate people, right?
It could have been.
Or two, I guess. The
I guess,
person who investigates
right,
her death
would
could have been the same
who.
Person who connects to Daniel.
I mean, maybe she worked backwards a little. Maybe it was, we need somebody who's going to get him to the fortune teller that we needed to.
Right.
But then it really does become a device. You
right.
know, it's not, I, you know what? I, that's a really, really good point. And I think that you are onto something.
I don't know that I'm right, but there's, she had a reason for making
something.
It the same person, because it could have been one person that arrested Simon and fell in love with Clara, and then one person who investigated Clara and
right,
then went and told. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I was going to say. This is one of those books where you, the more you think about it, the more confused you get. Yeah. Like, thinking about how he was, I thought, was in full control of his destiny.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Like, you think he could have just stayed home and, like, a piano wasn't going to fall on his head.
Yeah.
See, I just assumed that they were all going to die on the day that they're supposed to die. So it didn't matter where they were going. Or what. I thought he was going to die in a car accident on his way there. That's what I thought.
I see. Well, I guess that wouldn't beg the question that we're, right. you know, all contemplating now.
Right. I think that I read the book being like, the fortune teller said it. It's going to happen.
Do you think that she... It's so funny.
That's how this works.
Do you think she wrote it with the intention of the question with that she has the question? Did you think she had a firm belief in one way or another?
Hmm.
And can you write it like that without having a firm belief, like writing it, like you decide?
I wonder. So something that I've learned in talking to authors is that they often say that they don't know. They didn't know. Like they write the book without knowing the ending. I hear this a lot. I don't know that I believe
it. Do you know why?
When I've heard it said, it's usually because it's like, I just wanted to let the characters play out, or I wanted to surprise myself, or if I knew the ending, it would have been stale, or it would have been too obvious,
right.
or something like that. Like, it's almost like they have a diorama and they're like, let me just move this around and see what looks right or feels right. So I think that if I asked her, she would say, I didn't know, but I don't know if that's true.
Right. She had to have some sort of clear trajectory though, because it's so structured with the way that they die and the way that they,
right?
I don't know.
So do you think that Clara dies on her day?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
I mean, not Clara. Sorry.
Oh, Varya.
Varya.
I was like, Clara does.
Yeah, no, we know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Based off of the structure of how she, wrote everybody else, I would assume that Varya dies on her day. And it's so far away. And it said so much about, you know, the way she lived her life that I would assume. So,
Right. No, I agree. But I already thought that the moment we found out their dates, I was like, great, that's the date. Like, okay, The fortune teller.
I love that you were like, nope, that's the date. And I'm like, are they going to die on the date? And then once Simon did, I was like, it didn't help me at all.
It
was like, not telling at all.
Oh.
I was like, oh my God, is Clara going to die on the date? Then once the Clara, I was like, more than likely Daniel is going to, but I still didn't know. And I was shocked by his ending.
Right.
I don't know that I was the most pleased by his ending, but I was shocked by it.
I think Simon's death the most because I did not think that the question of the book was going to be, can you take fate into your own hands? Which is what the other two siblings really clearly did.
Right.
Clara and
Daniel.
So Simon, to me, I thought the whole book was going to be basically like Simon, that we just glimpsed into their life and we saw them die. So like, I thought like, oh, I'm like, Clara's going to fall while she's doing her magic trick. Like Daniel's going to die at war or something.
You didn't see the question coming.
I didn't see the questions coming. Mm-hmm. So because I just bought in, I was like, great. So they're going to die on their day. And this is the format. And this first person died on his day in this way, because this was the moment and the time. So I was like, oh, okay. What happens in the 90s? Like, oh, we just got foreshadowing. Siegfried and Warwick had their accident. Like, she's going to die in her magic show on opening night. Like, that's kind of how I was reading it, until it was like, she takes it into her own hands. But like, does she? Because she's mentally ill, or is she like, I didn't that
drunk,
all of that,
and the family and couldn't handle it. And she couldn't, I don't know. That's so interesting. I, from the beginning, was like, oh my God, who's going to take this well and who isn't?
Right. Right.
You know, and I think that's just because like, that's the question I have in general. Like, I wouldn't want to know, because like, I just know that I know I wouldn't handle it well.
If you knew, would you tell people around you?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'd tell anybody.
Hmm.
I'd be so scared of it. I'm not scared of death, but I am in some ways. Like, when it becomes very, when you say it out loud.
Yeah. Like, this is going to happen to me in 3 days. That's terrifying.
I'm just trying to look for this quote that Simon said. Oh, I would never have come to San Francisco if it weren't for her. I wouldn't have met Robert. I'd never have learned how to dance. I'd probably still be home waiting for my life to begin.
Mm.
I like that.
Yeah. What's not to like about Simon?
I know.
He's the dream. Simon. He's a dream of the book. He's the one that you just fall in love with. Okay. Before we wrap it up, there's one thing we have to talk about. And then there's another thing we have to talk about. We have to talk about Luke, the son of Arya.
Okay.
Because that was a twist that I didn't see coming.
I didn't see coming either.
There was no way to see it coming, to be fair.
No, really, it really
was. It was really just like, surprise, there's this other thing you don't know about.
Right.
But I wonder about him, because it seems like his whole point of existing was to say, hey, Gold family. And also Raj says the same thing. Hey, Gold family, life's shitty for everybody. You're not the only people who have pain and death and sorrow. And I'm curious. I don't know. I wonder why she did that, because I don't necessarily think that was the takeaway of the book if those people hadn't been there, if that conversation hadn't been there about his brother.
Well, wait, say that again. Say that last part again.
Well, I don't know if the takeaway of the book would have been, oh, this poor family, how sad for them. They're the only people who have experienced grief if we didn't have Luke to say, oh yeah, I killed my brother, kind of.
Right. Well, The first thought I had about Luke was less about that, the message of like, you know, you're not the only ones.
Right.
And more about like this family living on.
Right.
And each person taking another person with them along the way for the lineage of however that affects you. Right. I didn't really think about it the way that, you know, presenting it like, you're not the only one.
I don't know. Those were that and the same thing with Eddie. I didn't quite understand why we needed them.
Mm.
Raj made sense to me in the story. I was never like, oh, why does Clara need a husband and a father to Ruby? And why does Clara need this partner who pushes her? And like, that felt really organic to me.
Yeah.
And with Eddie, and then even more so Luke, I kind of was like, why is this person here?
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely feel the family theme. I think that's really what she was going for, especially when Ruby and Gertie form a relationship, mm-hmm. and they kind of, you know, Ruby's going to live, you know, Clara's going to live on through Ruby. And so I definitely think it was more about the lineage and the future of like taking people with you.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Especially with the mortality of the whole thing.
Right. And then it was sad that his brother died because that was sad.
That was really sad.
That was really sad. See, I thought that's how the deaths were going to go for the family. Like more like these freak moments of death.
Got it.
And less of these
taking fate into your own
hands. Yeah, like the pressure of the fortune teller like crushing them essentially.
I mean, I guess she's also just posing the questions of like death just comes anyway, but we some people control it. Some people are manifesting it.
Right.
And sometimes it's just a plain old accident.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's true. That's actually a great point that it's like, even if you know, it doesn't make it any better or any worse.
Right.
Like it's still going to happen. Okay. The last thing we have to talk about, which we always do, what did you think of the title and the cover?
Love the cover. A family tree.
Family tree. And I think my feeling was that each person is a different color, but like some of them bleed together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the orange and yellow and then the red and.
Yes. And then like the alone just looking at it before I read it, it was a very appealing cover to me, which mm-hmm. is important for a slightly non-reader.
Yeah. It's important for all readers.
Okay. I was like, wow, this is a good one. I like the title. It kind of has slipped my memory though. Like it's cause of Clara, right?
Yeah,
she is the title.
She names her act.
Show.
I'm the Immortalist.
And how does that bleed into the rest of the family? And they all live on within each other, I guess.
Yeah, I think
the
so.
Story.
I think so. I mean, it's the Immortalists. I don't...
Plus, like, with the family living on and then, like, these, I guess, I don't know.
Maybe it's, like, more hopeful and Chloe's, like, trying to make us feel good about our lives and be like, we're all immortal in some sense. Like, we all live on.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
That didn't make me feel that way.
I liked the title before I knew what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's a good title. Like, I just thought it was going to be one of those titles where it wasn't actually in the book.
Oh, do you like that better when it's not in the book?
I don't have a preference one way or the other, but that's just what I thought this one was going to be. But then when it came up in the book, I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm. She's tied the title in.
I like it. I like when she does.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments in reading is when there's like an aha moment, like the title pops up and you're like, bingo,
yes,
got it. Like now it makes sense. But for this, the title makes sense without it being the name of her act. If she had named her act Clara, the death defying,
it still would have worked.
It still would have worked as a title, but I don't hate it. I don't hate it. And it doesn't also
it.
Like,
but it's cryptic in a way. It's a very morphing title throughout the thing, and it's worth a bunch of metaphors, I'm sure. But
and obviously
it was captivating to me, and I really enjoyed this book.
I liked it too. I liked it. I was shocked by how much I liked it, and I understand why people love it. Like it didn't let me down in that way.
Great.
Yeah. So that's that.
Yay.
We're done with this. Jenna is all done with us here. Make sure you listen to Jenna's podcast, Showman.
Yay.
And you can find Jenna on social media. I'll link to all her things in the show notes. Yeah. And thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. This is so much fun.
Yay. And we will see you guys in the stacks. That's all for today. Thank you for listening, as always. And thank you to Jenna Ushkowitz for being our guest. Find everything we discussed on today's show in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, go to patreon.com/thestacks. Please make sure you are subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegearages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I will see you in the stacks.